We were talking, and I told her, look, this is what I really want to do. And I think we were on the same wavelength. We shared the same vision.
So
And
what was
over
it?
a cup of coffee,
What
we
was it that
thought,
you told her? You said, "This is my vision. This is what I want to do." What was that vision,
I
and
said,
what
I
did
want
you
to open
tell
the
her?
best restaurant in the country.
Ah. I'm around 100 kilos of chocolate every single day and more than 100 kilos of sugar every day. I'm a pastry chef and sugar is my bread and butter and jam and Nutella. But I've decided to take those layers off with my brand new show. I'm talking to fellow chefs, entrepreneurs, my friends and mentors about the blood, sweat and all the other ingredients that go into making it in the food industry. I'm Pooja Dhingra and you're listening to my podcast, No Sugarcoat. Today I'm talking to Chef Prateek Sadhu of Mask. Originally from Kashmir, he lived in Delhi and then worked at the Taj Group of Hotels for a few years before going to culinary school. He then worked in restaurants across the US and then at Noma. He returned to India and is currently the chef at the ambitious, ingredient-driven fine dining restaurant Mask in Mumbai. So, I mean, the last time I was at Prateek's restaurant, it's really funny because I told him like, hey, I was going there for an event and I wasn't on my, I'm
this
still
is the
on my,
Daniel Hum, right? No.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah
the Daniel
yeah,
Hum one. And
yeah.
And I was just like, Prateek, I really want to come for this event, but I'm not eating. I'm not drinking.
Yeah.
I don't, it'll be
and
really.
And she like a big list. Okay.
He's
what,
like,
what's going on? Are you okay?
And then he's like, okay, I'll make you a simple salad. Is that okay? And I'm like, yeah, simple salad is great. So this was like my day five of this whole no sugar, no everything. And I enter the restaurant and, really, I just get some green tea and I'm sipping through my green tea. And now
everyone's having champagne.
Everyone's having champagne and like all these gin cocktails. It's beautiful. And I'm just sitting there like, you can do this, you can do this. And then everyone gets their food and they're like, are you sure you don't want to eat? I said, yeah. I said, chef is making me a salad. He's making me a salad. And I get the most, my plate comes in front of me and it's like, avocado with lobster.
Yeah, it is
it's
lobster.
An avocado lobster salad. I'm like, this is not a simple salad, chef. This is like,
so
I
come
was
on, you're at Mask.
Yeah, mind blown. I was like, this is a great salad. Do you understand what a simple salad is?
Yeah, avocado and lobster, right? I think that's simple.
Yeah. So, Prateek, tell me, how did you like? Let's start from the beginning. How did you start cooking? When was your like? Do you have like this first memory of being in the kitchen?
So 1990, not in the kitchen, I'll tell you, it's at the farm actually. So 1990, we all moved out from Kashmir. Like we were practically thrown out. But anyway, so we're living...
You're from Kashmir, that's where
I'm from Kashmir. We moved out in 1990 when everything happened. All Kashmir Pandits were said, like they said bye to them. So we moved to Jammu and my aunt, she still has a huge farm. And they live practically right on the farm. And every weekends were me and my sister, we used to go and like chill with them, like spend time with my aunt
and
uncle.
How old were you?
I think I was 7 years old, like 7, 8. And we used to cook eggs and my mom used to make rogan josh. And they still have that farm. They grow their vegetables. And so like, when I say organic, like there's no fertilizer. So they use cow dung. They use like a lot of other compost stuff. So I think that's my first memory, like cooking eggs, mummy making rogan josh, and rogan josh, rice and eggs.
So you grew up?
I grew up partly in Jammu,
yeah.
Then we moved to Delhi,
mm-hmm.
Then again we moved back to Jammu.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I lived
always,
a big nomadic life.
Yeah, but always interested in food, like what are your like early food memories?
So I think, one thing I keep saying is like, if you're a refugee, there are only two things that you take with you.
Mm-hmm.
One is your food and another is your language.
Hmm.
So those are two things like you cannot leave,
yeah.
Like wherever you go. Like if I'm moving to Australia or Antarctica, I'll still speak my language and I'll still cook my own food. So, it goes with any other person as well, like not just refugees. But of course, like with refugees, like because with food, there's so many memories attached. And, when I really think about it right now, we used to live in Delhi, and my mother used to cook like traditional Kashmiri food. Like still there, she does cook like really traditional food. And she used to make these like dried vegetables and like dried turnips or dried bottle gourd, which really didn't make sense because if you're in Kashmir, that makes sense to eat those kind of food. because it's winter, you eat dried food with like a lot of meat.
Yeah.
But, you know, doing that in Delhi was just like, you know, just now I really think about it. You know, I feel like for my mother, those were the memories.
That's what she.
That is why she kept cooking those traditional food again and again. And we used to like really hate like eating like haak, like it's practically cooked in our house every single day. And now I love it, but I used to hate it growing up. It's like again, like haak.
What is typical Kashmiri food like?
Haak rice. It's called poor man's food, but you know, now it's every household will have a little bit of meat, a little bit of haak, a pickle.
Haak.
Haak is your...
Like, what is haak?
Haak is your collard greens, actually.
Okay. And how do you cook it normally?
So it's with just a little bit of water and you just like saute it. One chili and there's one spice called veri masala. It's like 17 spices and you put a little bit of that and that's it. So it's a stew.
Okay. Got
yeah. So it's a stew rice. So now I like really understand why she used to cook really traditional food there, because for her it was like
memories. Memory. Home.
Yeah, and it's like we were just like, what the hell again?
And then how did you, you know, how did you decide that this is?
I mean, honestly, I wanted to be a commercial pilot. I want to be. I want to fly planes.
Really?
Yeah, I'm fascinated. But it so happened like it was a big time lag between me, you know, getting into a commercial pilot course. And, you know, in between, I thought, you know, let me try hotel management. So I, you know, enrolled myself there. And I think in 6 months, I really like knew that, you know, I wanted to be a chef.
So where did you do your hotel management?
It was in IHM Pusa.
Okay.
So I graduated from there, started working for Taj Group of Hotels, worked for 4 years. So I moved from Taj Bangalore to Taj Delhi. 6 months in this Taj, I hated it.
Why?
No,
tell
because
me
of travel.
More.
Because they put me in Andheri and that was my first time I lived in Bombay, like practically lived. And like that train like was just like, I said, oh my God, like how do you really commute? Like how?
Yeah.
So like 10,000 people, like that was my first experience. Imagine like I never had experience like you know, these like humongous trains and like 10,000 people trying to get into one compartment.
Yeah.
So that's why I hated it. Otherwise it was fine.
And this is all in the kitchen department or were you?
Just kitchen. And my last like experience with Taj was at Taj Delhi. Then I moved out. I was really frustrated at that point of time. I wanted to leave like kitchen. Yeah. I wanted to leave because I think, you know, over a 4 year, because the, you know, it's a very different culture. If you work in hotels, not that it's bad, but it's a very different environment. It's bureaucratic as well.
Thomas called it a soul sucking.
Yeah, and I would completely agree with Thomas. You know, it's actually soul sucking. Like I was really questioning myself.
Yeah.
Imagine like if you're really questioning yourself, saying, like,
and what kind
do
of,
I really want to do
what
this?
What kind of food were you cooking?
Just, I was cooking actually European food at that point of time. It was a all day dining and like around 700 people in one day. So I think I was in a point like, you know, I don't want to do this. Maybe I'm not cut out for this. But I think I should try food writing. I should try this.
So there was a time resigned. Where you thought like maybe food is, maybe
I was, yeah,
cooking
I was,
is not for me.
Exactly. I was having second thoughts and I thought maybe I should try something, but maybe with food. So I resigned and I was not doing anything. I spoke to my sister. I mean, she's something like I always like speak to whenever I'm in doubt. So I told her, I said, this is the matter. And she said, you know, why don't you go and study? And kind of explore yourself. And maybe, you know, that'll kind of help you out. And I always wanted to go to CIA. So I applied, got through. And I think that changed my life completely. I would really want to say like, you know, I really got baptized there.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, if you can just take me through your first week there. Like, what was that experience like? Like looking at...
That was the first experience ever, like I stepped out of country. So...
Oh, wow.
So I was like overwhelmed. I was like, oh my God. Oh my God. Like cars. Oh my God. Buildings. No, but, you know, the campus is so amazing.
Yeah.
First week was just trying to figure myself out because it was a new country, new culture, language. I was trying to get hold of the accent as well. But one thing I was really wanted to make something out of it because this was my second chance. I didn't want to fuck it up. So I said, you know, this is make or break it. And, you know, I really want to do something here. And I think that kept driving me. I had like two jobs. I was a resident assistant there. Then I got into this ACF team. So CI has a culinary team, which competes for American Culinary Federation. So I got into that. We won like regional, nationals. Like we did some crazy stuff there and like gold medals and whatever. So I think that really helped me. It really pushed me a lot. And I always wanted to work for Thomas Keller. So
yeah, that was going to be my next question.
So my first book, French Laundry, while I was in Taj, I was really fascinated. And I always wanted to work for Chef Keller. I was like, you know, this is the guy. And, you know.
Why? What was it about
him? I think it was, I never met him. It was only the book. Like, I kept reading French Laundry again and again. And I think, you know, this is something which I want to do. Like, this is something which I really want to do. And I got a chance to stage it per se. And I think, you know, that it was phenomenal. Like, you know, my first experience of a Michelin star restaurant was just, it was really overwhelming as well.
Yeah. So you finished school and then you went to French Laundry or?
No, in between I stage at Alinea.
Yeah.
Because for me, I was like, you know, if I get a break of 1 week, I want to do something. So I starched. So I will go to Laban and then during weekends, wash dishes, just work in the kitchen, like do any like random stuff, but just be in the kitchen. So started Alinea per se, French Laundry, and on and off at Laban then. So when I graduated, I started working for the chef called Michael Mina in DC.
Okay.
For a year, I worked for him. After 1 year, I applied for internship at Noma. And I was spending time in Copenhagen, my favorite city. I love Copenhagen.
So tell me about that. Like, you applied for the stage. I know it's very difficult to get one. When you finally...
It's fairly easy, honestly.
It's fairly easy.
Yeah.
So there's some hope for everybody out there, yeah. So what was it like when you first got to Noma? Like,
yeah, I was just like peeling walnut skins. That was fun because they had this like walnut milk ice cream.
Walnut milk ice cream.
Yeah.
Wow.
And like we had to peel like 100 kilos. And then like 50,000 stages just like...
Peeling, wow.
I was like, no, what am I doing? But anyways, like, you know, I graduated from there to do something different and something more fun. We foraged a lot.
Yeah, so what was the difference between you went from like a Michelin star restaurant in America to now best restaurant? Was Noma best restaurant?
Yeah, that time they were. It was in 2009, 2010 actually.
Yeah.
No, like.
How were the philosophies different from both these kitchens? Because Noma has a very different philosophy, and
Noma has a very different philosophy of, you know, using this like ingredients from the same region, harnessing the entire Nordic region. I think for me also the biggest takeaway was not like working in this kitchen or working in at Noma kitchen or recipes.
Yeah.
I think the biggest take was that, you know, how that man has really changed the map. Like Copenhagen, I don't know, like 5, 6, 10 years down the line, nobody knew about Copenhagen. Or people knew just because of tourist stuff. Like, he made that small city as one of the biggest gastronomic capitals of the world.
Yeah.
Like that, he just changed that. Like, that thought process will always be with me. Nothing else about that.
And
that
I think
restaurant.
That's what most people who go there, they say, like, just the way the kitchen.
Just the way. It's like the entire ecosystem that he has built. And with the Noma, new Noma as well, like the entire ecosystem. It is not about me. For me, it was not about how the food was so delicious or like, you know, the recipes. It was about the thought process. It was about that small idea that he had and like, you know, how what it became.
And so now you're away for so long. Like, to make the decision to come back, was that easy? Was that always what you wanted to do?
I mean, I'll be honest. I purely came back because of my parents. They were alone.
I feel you.
So from I moved back to New York and I was working at the Pierre Hotel then, and then resigned there. I was moving to San Francisco. I got a sponsor. My H-1B was getting sponsored. I was quite excited. But honestly, like, you know, I kept speaking to my parents and they were here chilling, but I felt they were quite alone as well.
Yeah.
I have a sister. She's settled in US. So it was just one night decision. I emailed the guy. I said, look, you know, because of some problem, I can't come. I'm so sorry. I booked my plane tickets. Went to Paris first.
Always. Paris is always a good idea.
So from New York, I flew to Paris, spent a week there. And then I came to Mumbai, actually. Yeah. Spending time doing nothing. Just
so your parents were in Mumbai?
No.
What did you do in
Mumbai? Yeah, I was like, let me meet my friends because anyways, I'm going to hang out with you.
Your parents and come to Mumbai.
So they went to Srinagar. I came to Mumbai, spent like 10, 15 days just like meeting friends, drinking.
Yeah.
And then I spent some time in Kashmir. I had no idea what I wanted to do. And then suddenly one of my friends, she was working in Ila. She's like, hey, you want to go to Udaipur? I said, yeah, sure. Why not?
So you moved back and you went to Udaipur.
Yeah. So he said, you know, my ex boss, and he's an amazing, amazing guy. His name is Kaisar Sadri. He was then executive chef at Leela Udaipur. He was like, you know, look, why don't you come down, spend a day here? So yeah, sure, why not? And the property, if you want, it's stunning.
Leela Udaipur, it's gorgeous.
It's amazing. It's right on the bank of Lake Pichola, and it's beautiful.
So he tricked you. He said,
"Yeah, actually, he tricked me because from this like busy life, like I was just like wow." And I still remember I went in September, and September is the best time that you can go to Udaipur.
Why is that?
Because it's the first like month, not the first, but the monsoons are at its peak, yeah. And it's in between the hills, and it's so pretty. Like everything's green. Everything's green, like Lake Pichola is full.
Yeah.
It's the most romantic place I've ever seen, honestly.
And so then you started working at the kitchen in Leela.
Yeah. And
what were you doing there? Were you?
I was number two. I was assisting, I was executive sous chef with him. And I think that, like, you know, Leela and, you know, Kazad both, they gave me a playground just to play.
Hmm.
And I was like fresh from New York, like had these crazy ideas, really wanted to do something with my life. So I spent 2 years, I mean, which is quite
yeah,
a lot.
Yeah, wow.
Like and 2 years, like I was there.
And how much of the city did you have time to really enjoy?
I had the best time of life, honestly, Pooja, in Udaipur. Like, you know, work was fun. You had personal time for yourself. And
maybe I should go to the Leela.
You should, seriously.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
So spent 2 years there and... I wanted to quit actually, but they were really kind enough, and I think they kind of liked me. They said, you know, why don't you go and open Le Cirque for us, and
nice.
It'll be a good move. And I thought, you know, Le Cirque is a big brand, why not? So I moved to Bangalore to open Le Cirque, and that was my last assignment with the Leela before I, you know, met Aditi. And
And so how did Mask happen?
So I met Aditi in Udaipur. She was running a catering company that point of time from her house. We kept in touch. I saw the space in between because I was planning to quit Leela. I saw the space and, you know, I thought, you know, it's better to open Le Cirque than to, you know, come here. But when I quit Leela, she got in touch you know, we were talking and, you know, I told her, you know, look, you know, this is what I really want to do. And I think we were on the same wavelength. We shared the same vision.
What was it that you told her? You said, this is my vision, this is what I want to do. What was that vision?
I said, I want to open the best restaurant in the country.
This
is the first line. We're still working on it. I think it's a long way. But, you know, the first step,
so
I feel like in
way.
Life, first step is always important.
Yeah.
You know, we always fear that, you know, ye ho jayega, we'll fail or you'll do this. I was very new to Bombay. Never worked in Bombay. It was only those that... Taj ka 6 months I had. Otherwise, I never worked in Bombay. And, you know, for me, it was the first kind of city which I would open my first restaurant. And, you know, I mean, Aditi was there. So, thankfully, you know.
So, you had this conversation, said, we're going to open the best restaurant in India.
I said, yeah, let's do it.
And then what was...
I don't know how, but we will. As I just said, with Noma, the one thing that I really took back was he just like... Copenhagen, like, you know, it snows for like six, 7 months. It snows. Like, he made that region so cool and, you know, finding those ingredients. And when we are sitting in India, like, we have this wealth of, like, agriculture and, like, ingredients. So, you know, let's explore. And that was the initial thought process we started with.
And so, you know, the concept of your restaurant is basically farm to fork.
See, I'll tell you, the concept is actually, it's very, very ingredient-based.
Yeah.
And it's also an interpretation of our memories. For example, I do a lot of like stuff from Kashmir or whatever I grew up with.
Yeah.
Those techniques I want to use or those familiar flavors.
Hmm.
So it's very ingredient based. It's very nostalgic as well. And the kind of food that we do is just more progressive. We want to really recreate those memories, but in a very different way. We want to play with textures. We want to play with like those memories. We want to play with those ingredients. So,
and what you're trying to do is very different and not done before, like zero waste. Like,
I want to be zero waste. Yeah. We're trying hard to be zero waste.
And you know, like in restaurants, like that is my biggest concern. You know, at the end of the day, I'm like always trying to see, okay, what can we do? Can we compost? Can we do this? Like, it's a big issue in hand. And like,
so right now we have two desserts. Yeah. I'll give you a small example. We have two desserts in the menu. So we do a pre-dessert, and a finisher. Finishers are petit fours. So right now we have pickled plums that we do with, you know, black pepper cremo. So for pickled plum, we use the peel and we use it for the savory course. And then we have a pineapple as a main dessert, pineapple and smoked ice cream. So for pineapple, we use everything. So whatever like skin we get or whatever pith we get after juicing, we dehydrate, make a powder and crumbs out of it. and we use it back in the dish.
So using everything.
So we try to use as much as we can.
Yeah.
So as I said, you know, it's a longer,
process,
but you know,
to get to...
I think I'll be the luckiest chef if I can get the restaurant as 100% waste free. Yeah. But I think it's not impossible, but it's very difficult.
I mean, that's already such a big step towards
it. Yeah, we really want to use. We really think, like, everybody, we all come together in our briefing saying, okay, look what we can do. Okay.
You know, and so your R&D for your ingredients must be a long process, right? To get through this whole thing of...
Now we're getting a lot of ingredients from Uttarakhand. We're tied up with farms, Kashmir.
Yeah.
And it's a pain. My consignment didn't come from Kashmir because it was a hartal. Then we changed the menu because we don't have any menus in the restaurant.
Yeah.
So then, we print the menu at 6:30.
So I can't go onto Zomato and check what's
been served. There's no menu.
So then there are no reviews?
There are reviews, but there are no menus.
Oh, okay.
So that's fun. Zomato is fun.
Why? Tell me more.
because it's Zomato.
Yeah. I think I reached a point where I just stopped checking them. You reach a stage where you're like, okay, I appreciate creative, constructive feedback, but after a while, it's just like, for my sanity, I'm going to stop checking this.
And food is very, in India, food is very personal.
Yeah. And subjective. I mean,
I mean, I can respect a constructive
comment. What's the worst review that you got?
We had a few, actually. Said, who is this new guy called Pratik Sadhu? And, you know... Whatever, like, he just said something really, like, annoying. But he said, what does he want to prove to Bombay City? Will he survive? Or less? I think it was very, like, sarcastic.
Personal, huh?
Yeah, very personal. It was, will he survive? Will Bombay give him a second chance? But because Bombay doesn't give a second chance.
Wow.
I was like, dude, who are you? Daud.
Wow. So how do you react when you read these things?
I don't react at all. I think the best way is to just
put your head down and keep working.
Yeah, put your head down, keep working, you know, keep sticking to what we believe in. Like in first 6 months, there were like so many people when we opened, they came to me and said, friends from industry saying, look, you know, Bombay doesn't function like that. Maybe you don't know and this is your first experience. And I know you've had like so many different experiences and you want to do something, which is great, but this doesn't work in Bombay.
Hmm.
And I said, we'll be very frank, you know, take your time. You want to experiment, but we'll give you top 6 months. You will shut down.
Wow. Are you serious?
I swear. I mean, they were like, you know, trying to help. It's like, no, you know, maybe you can plug in some other thing inside. Do your this thing. Plug in this, this and this. And that's how like, you know, because Bombay is a very price sensitive city. Bombay is this, Bombay is that. I said, okay, the maximum is that I'll fail and, you know, I won't die.
Hmm.
So let me try. Let me fail. So it's very important.
No,
I think it's very important in life to fail.
Yeah,
it teaches a lot of things.
And so, like, personally, like, when something happens, like, when you set out and you have certain expectations and you think, like, you know, this is how this is going to perform and it doesn't, then how do you deal with that?
I think 6 months were really tough for us as well.
Yeah.
Because it was a new concept. Who wants to come for a tasting when you spend, like, 3 hours and spend a certain set amount of money? It was difficult. 6 months, we struggled, you know. But the only thing which we didn't do was didn't change the concept. We kept improving. I think I'm a very improved chef what I was 18 or 19 months ago. And I still want to evolve myself every single day.
Yeah.
I think evolvement is something. If you're stuck there, then you're dead. You need to keep evolving yourself every single day.
Also, I think that it goes to show that it's important that if there's something that you really believe in to stay true to what you believe in and not listen to the noise and not listen to people telling you what to do. And because, you know, that comes, I mean,
maybe when, I wanted to prove myself wrong somewhere.
Well,
so, you know,
I
want to prove myself wrong,
open...
like, you know, because I thought, no, I'm, you know, I think this is the way to go and I really want to do this. And why is it wrong? Like, you know, I think
you wanted to prove yourself right, not then wrong.
Wrong.
I think for me as well, when I started the cafe in the beginning, same thing. Like so many people came and told me like, you know, you do dessert. Like, why are you getting into food? Like, why are you doing this? And I was just it's a natural progression. Like my childhood dream was to own a cafe one day and I want to do it. And it was so tough for us as well. You know, the first year, you're saying 6 months for me, the first year was just like figuring it out. Like, you know, the location, like what's happening there, the food, how are people responding to it? And then people are saying, oh, the desserts are amazing. The food sucks. And then, you know, we're like, no, but the food is so good. Like, you know, like it's, so I think it was like a sort of trial and error sort of period. But at the same time, it was so important for us to believe in what we are doing and not like let noise come and affect us and kind of ruin this sort of...
You live in this world where everybody has an opinion.
Yeah.
So if you start listening to everyone, then you're gone. So it's very important to keep your head down, do whatever you believe in, and keep pushing. And keep pushing. Like, keep, like, evolving. Keep, like, making things better for yourself. Improve yourself. I think that's the best way to do it.
And so, like, at the restaurant now, you know, you were telling me about, just going back, Pratik has promised me a trip to Kashmir. Which is going to happen very soon.
Well, you ditched. You're going to Bangkok now. So, like, you can't say anything. So.
But I'll come. You said mid-August. We can still make it happen.
Ladakh.
But, yeah. So, you were telling me about the Sea Buckthorn.
Yeah.
So tell me more. Like what?
I think
what
is first it? Time when I had Seabuckthorn was it Noma? So I was researching while I was doing research. I found out it's grown in Ladakh and extensively it grows wild and in Nubra Valley. Okay. So we traveled and we found Seabuckthorn. So every year now we go.
How hard is it travel?
It's you land
I'm just
in
asking for myself.
No, it is because I don't know if you have altitude sickness. Everybody will have altitude sickness.
Yes, I do have altitude sickness.
So one day you need to everybody needs to rest. Or you pop pills.
Mm.
I do both. I rest and pop pills. Mm. And then second day you start traveling to Nubra. So it's a 6-hour drive and you have to pass the highest motorable pass in the world.
Wow.
It's called Khardungla Pass. And then you reach Nubra, you stay for 2 days. And the village is called, Turtuk. So it's the last village before Pakistan border starts.
Wow.
So it's fun. So you also discovered that lavender grows wild.
And it's safe?
It's safe. We used it in our teas. And
no, the
Yeah, it's safe.
Lavender is safe. You will come back through out of it. What are you talking about?
So you get wild lavender, you get Seabuckthorn, and you get tons of buckwheat.
Yeah, wow.
So that's their native crop.
Okay. And so you do this how often?
Every year, once a year. Because August is the time from 15th August to 15th September is the prime time when you can harvest Seabuckthorn.
Okay.
So we go every August.
And how do you use it in the restaurant? Like what do you
so
do with
we,
it?
So what we did was we made a sorbet out of it. We have marinated our kind of fish with it. So made ice cream with it. With a bunch of things, paired it with a black pepper thing. So we done a lot of things. Made into a donut shape.
That's the I've seen pictures.
It's
beautiful, yeah.
So we done a bunch of things with it. So I love Seabuckthorn. It's amazing. It reminds me of that orange candy when to eat as a kid.
And so Pratik, you're one of the chefs who I know who's really open to collaborations. And I think that's what you enjoy. That's what it comes across as. So can you just walk me through how do you decide which are the chefs that you worked with? What excites you?
So I think we collaborate with chefs who I know directly, indirectly. And who are, most importantly, he needs to be a very an amazing person.
Yeah.
So the first collaboration we did was with one of my favorite chefs and he's an amazing, and we are doing it again soon. With Matt Orlando from us. I think collaborations for us, it's very important because for me, you learn so many things. And when you, the exchange of ideas is just phenomenal. You know, the way a other person would see that thing and the way you see that thing is totally different. And, we collaborate on every menu is a collaborative menu. It's not like my dish or his dish. Yeah. It's not a pop-up.
So how
we never do pop-ups.
Yeah.
I know I see a lot of people writing that, Mas did a pop-up. We never do a pop-up. It's always a collaboration. Yeah. And it's always that spontaneous menu that we do. And that's it. It's not a prefix menu.
So you and a chef would come together. You see a bunch of ingredients.
So we always travel somewhere. Like this time with Mike, we traveled to Kashmir.
Yeah.
And we were just writing menus on our way. It's fine. We have dandelion, we have this, we have kalari, we have this.
Yeah.
We kept writing things down and ideas and we just sat for an hour and made the menu.
That's amazing. And then...
So exchange of ideas it's a different there's so much things that we need to learn from these chefs. So as I said, evolving, we're in the process of evolving.
And in the last 1.5 years, have you had that moment where you've had one of these chefs or any one moment where you've been wow, this just happened. Have you had that wow moment?
We did a 6-hand dinner recently with Daniel Burns and Jonathan Tam. So Daniel, he was a pastry chef at Noma, the first pastry chef of Noma. And again, amazing guy. He started his own gelato thing called Burns Gelato. So we were experimenting with potato and sweet potato and purple sweet potato, and we were experimenting, but it was not kind of getting through. But suddenly, you know, we made a sorbet with purple sweet potato and coffee put together. We were just like experimenting, and suddenly, like, you know, when we started tasting, like this is so good, let's put it on the menu.
Potato and coffee,
and
ice cream. Wow.
And it was a sorbet,
stealing this idea. No, I'm not. But yeah, so yeah. I also meant like in terms of like, you know, if there was a certain chef that you wanted to meet, or like having all these people, like I know when Daniel Hum was in your restaurant, I was fangirling. So like you've had so many of these chefs come visit you.
I'll tell you. So when Massimo was here,
yeah.
So his whole entire team was dining at Mask. And they said, oh, Massimo is very busy with other things, so he won't come suddenly. Yeah. And suddenly Massimo walks in the kitchen. And you're like, what the f***?
And you
just like, I don't know what to do. Like, I was just like, okay, like, I don't know, like, what to say. Should I say hi? Should I say hello? Like, what?
And you weren't prepared for it at all.
Yeah, we were not, because the team was dining. They were like having their last course, and suddenly like Massimo walks in.
What did you cook for him?
And we gave him like, he was like, dude, like, just give me a couple of things. I just want to taste.
And you obviously wanted to make him the whole menu.
Yeah. And he was like, shit. So, but yeah, we made him a couple of things, which he really, really enjoyed. And I'm so glad.
Yeah. So that was like a...
I don't know how to call that moment. Like, it was just like something...
Like aha. Like, I don't know.
Like, ah, shit. What?
This is real.
How do I react?
Yeah. Complete fangirling, man. I mean, that for me would be like if I would meet Pierre Hermé. I think something like that. Like,
yeah.
That would be crazy. I actually went all the way to... I actually went to Paris. This happened to me in April. Some friend was hosting like a cooking competition in south of France. And Pierre Hermé was a judge. And so she knew this 6 months in advance. So she told me, Pooja, if you can plan your trip to Paris around the same time, come. And I was like, yeah, man, I'm going to do this. And I reach and it's like French. Oh my God, they're striking all the time. And the trains are, you know, like I managed somehow make it to this place. And they're like, yeah, he can't make it today because of the strikes. He'll come tomorrow morning. And then you have like, you know, you have Yannick Alenaud and you have Pierre, you know, like you have all these amazing chefs. And the only one left to arrive is Pierre Hermé. And they're all judging this competition. And the next morning, he's supposed to reach there at 9 o'clock. And I'm up awake, you know, go for breakfast, like waiting.
You're there at 8.
Waiting 8 o'clock, like waiting for him to arrive. And then at 9 o'clock, they come and tell me like, you know, we're so sorry, but the train strike, he just can't make it. I was heartbroken,
damn.
Completely heartbroken. But then they come and tell me, they're like, hey, because he can't make it, there's a space for a pastry chef on this judges panel.
Oh, wow.
And the guy from Braga, like the uniform company, comes and gives me Pierre Hermé's uniform. And he's would you like to fill in? And I was just standing there like, no, like really this is happening. Luckily we're the same size. So I took his uniform. I ran to my room. I was like shaking, shivering. Put the uniform on. I actually have it. I went, I judged. I had, like, it was like an out of body experience. I judged this competition where I didn't contribute to anything because I was like, I don't deserve to be at this table. I finished it.
What a moment for you.
What a moment, man. What a moment. I finished and these guys were just like, you can keep his chef coat. So I have it.
Oh my God.
I got it back with me.
It's with you?
Yeah, I stole. I mean, no, they gave it
not
to me. They gave it to me. So someday, whenever I meet him, I'll tell him that, you know, I have his chef coat. So that was my...
What a moment.
Yeah. So I think these are the things that you kind of, you know, and that's the thing. Like, I have a lot of young kids who come to me and, you know, and I'm sure they come to you as well and they ask you for advice and they tell you, like, what is it that... and everybody wants success overnight, right? Everybody wants... So what
is it? It's tough. It's stressful.
Yeah. No, so what
sometimes you really want to run away from it.
What is the advice that you would give, like, young chefs? Like, what is...
I think if you have a dream, never stop believing. I mean, it's... And, you know, don't be afraid to fail. Yeah. You know, I had this guy. He left Mask and he wanted to do something different. And then he came back. He's like, you know, can I get my job back? I said, I'll be more than happy, but... But I said, you didn't do anything. Like, you didn't even fail. I said, if you fail, then it's fine. I mean, at least, like, you pursued your dream. You really worked hard for it. And you failed, which is fine. Which is totally normal.
Yeah.
But you didn't even fail. I said, go fail, then come back. I think it's very important.
Yeah.
Very important. So, yeah. I mean, that's the only advice.
And for you, Prateek, what is the big dream? Like, what do you want to do with your life when you look at it?
I want to be a farmer.
Really?
Honestly. And I have my retirement plans already. I want to be a farmer. I want to retire. I want to run a very successful restaurant. And, you know, success is something which is very, that word is very subjective. It's not getting into anywhere. When I say anywhere, like into, it may be lists or, you know, people talking about it or being number one, number two. That doesn't really matter. Success is when, you know, when you can really step back and people who you have mentored can run the show as is. That's the real success. That's the real happiness. And I can go back and do my farming.
Amazing.
That's a real success. And the restaurant can run at its full pace, deliver the same quality every single day. Yeah, that's success. That's job done.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yes.
It was lovely.
You just heard Chef Prateek Sadhu from Mars. Next week, I'm talking to cookbook author Nadine Redzepi in Denmark. We talk about her first introduction to food, cooking for her family, her love story with Renee, and the dishes that started it all.
No Sugarcoat is a Made in India production. This episode is produced by Sharanya Subramanian, edited by Soundman. Studio setup by Apoorv Isaac, a.k.a. Lala. Sound equipment by Artiste Studios. Our theme music is Rhythm Maker by the band Haiku. For more information, check out madeinindia.in.